Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Leadership. What does it mean? We know about generals, we know about presidents, we know about the president of the PTA, people who are the heads of organizations. Are they the only leaders? From our point of view, leadership is that quality in the individual that influences the thoughts, actions, and feelings of others. For us, yes, there are positions of leadership, but our interest is the leadership of each individual in a group. To what is that individual leading those around them? If we have people in an audience, you lead people to pay attention or to not pay attention, depending on your behavior. Your behavior is always influencing those people that are traditionally looked at as your leaders. If you're ignoring them, they will talk more loudly. They will do things to get your attention. They may reproach you. They may give up. We're always influencing each other. So when we talk about leadership today, we're talking about that aspect of every human being that influences the thoughts, actions, and feelings of others. So everyone is a leader. You may have a position of leadership, but the real question is, can you empower leadership wherever you are by your way of being? And your way of being and the thoughts, feelings, and actions you evoke in others is your leadership from our point of view. Now, today we are going to talk about people in positions of leadership in some cases. In other cases, we're going to talk about people that want to change the behavior of the group that they're operating in. So, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright, Professor of Transformational Leadership at the Wright Graduate University for the Realization of Human Potential. And we're here on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. And our first caller is Fessel. He says, how do I inspire leadership in a cutthroat company? In a cutthroat company culture, where vulnerability is seen as a sign of weakness. Well, Fessel, talk to us about that.
Hi, Bob. Well, this is Fessel. So I'm looking to get a job in another company, in another industry, in another country. So where I've seen and what I understand is it's a more corporate environment where I'll be going. And people are advising me that, okay, when you get there, you have to be stoic and aggressive and present do not show any sign of vulnerability or weakness and or any friendliness. You have to rule by an iron fist and fear. So is that kind of like attitude that I am thinking about, that how will I engender, working together towards a common objective and vision and that kind of environment?
You know, the people that are talking to you are probably pretty insecure. Leadership can be a very scary activity, but the fact of the matter is, wherever you are in humanity, there are certainly different cultural rules. But your job is to win the hearts and minds of the people that you're leading. And in order to win their hearts and minds, you have to be leading towards something that matters to them. Transformational leadership would be the same in any culture. Your transformational leader walks their talk. Your transformational leader has a sense of vision and wants other people to engage in that vision, wants people to be intellectually engaged, and is interested in the well-being of each individual. Now, this may be a relatively stoic culture, and you may not start your leadership position with jokes and all kinds of feelings, but people want to be cared about. They will be curious that you're interested in them. They will be curious that you want the best for them. But but eventually they will be loyal. And what you're asking them to be is not just loyal to you, you're asking them to be loyal to a mission, a larger mission. And that mission has to include their well-being. Does that sound more
Thank
inviting?
You, Bob. Yeah, that does. It sounds definitely. And I can see how over time this is achievable. I can't just land. I realize that, okay, maybe I can't be that, like, just off the bat. Like, it'll require a little working with them in the environment and engaging the culture. And, you know, then adapting that change, you know, over time.
So, and there are truly cultural variables. So when I have worked with banks in Switzerland, for example, the CEO of the bank was nervous about me. I'm not only American, I'm an unusually American-American. No, I talk more. I express more. And that can be endearing, or it can be a pain in the butt to people. And so you don't want to deny your roots as a USA American. You don't want to deny your roots and the schooling that you've gone to. At the same time, you have to learn about the culture, and you have to honor the cultural variables. Judith and I were doing a seminar in China. It was a two-day seminar, and the first day went absolutely great. And we gave everybody a homework assignment to deal with their friendships. The next day, the seminar started out dead when we tried to deal with friendships. And for 45 minutes, we struggled until it occurred to me through questioning and talking to the room. We had over 100 people in the room. That it was a one-child society. And their idea of friendship is very different. If you grow up in a family of multiple kids, your skill set's one thing. But if you grow up as the only child, and your grandparents and your parents are fixated on you, and the sun rises and sets on you, your friendships are going to be very different. And you're not going to have the same kind of friendships. You're not going to define friendship the same way. So once we started cracking the cultural code difference, we were able to get back on track with the seminar. As a leader, you will have cultural code differences to crack. And one of the primary things you're going to want to do there is you're going to want to get advisors, people that understand the culture who can give you advice about that culture. And by the way, the same thing's true about every company. Companies have different cultures, whether you're in the Chicago area, in the United States, in North America, it doesn't matter. You want to understand the company culture, mm-hmm. the national culture, and then each person in that culture has their own culture. So the more sensitive you are to variation in people, the better you will be able to translate your message, your caring, your mission into each individual's mission. And individuals can have very, very different missions. Some individuals are all about family. Some individuals are all about getting ahead. Some individuals are all about their faith. Others are all about money, power, control, and some are all about everybody's well-being, and some of them are about developing themselves. So your message will need to be adaptable to all the different types of people and the different concerns that they have. That's one of the beautiful challenges of being a human being, communicating with other human beings.
An adaptable message, that is something I'll have to work on. Thank you, Bob.
Yep, take care. So, thanks a lot, Fessel. So, you know, Fessel's bind is a really big one, because it's how do I bring out the best in everybody, no matter where they are in their development, no matter what their culture is. And how do I help people transform? Because transformation is the same process no matter what the culture. We found that in our research on Transform, the science of spectacular living. Everybody has yearning. And those who engage with their yearning are more likely to learn and grow and experiment and come out with new behaviors and transform themselves. Because as Jack Mesereau says, childhood is formation, adulthood is transformation. So we are always, no matter what culture we're in an opportunity to transform from one state to the next. And the dynamics of that transformation in all levels of consciousness and development are basically the same. We have to follow our yearnings. We have to engage. We have to learn. We have to grow. We'd love to have you pick up 2 free chapters of our book, Transform, the Science of Spectacular Living, at writeliving.com/2freechapters. Fantastic, fantastic opportunity we have as human beings to bring out our best and help bring out the best in others. And that's what we mean by leadership, is really developing your capacity to influence the thoughts, feelings, and actions of others in a positive direction, whether you're the boss of the company or the newest hire. And our next question is from Travis. He says, I'm interested in being a leader in my circle and leading those who want to follow versus those who don't. How do I decide who's willing and worth my time? Travis, tell me about it.
I think a lot of people have tried to start going to the gym and get their friends to go to the gym, and the friends fall off after about a week or two. That's kind of the analogy I have for a lot of the things that I'm interested in, and I try to get the people who are in my immediate circle to join me, and then I'm promptly disappointed when they fall off. And so I'm trying to figure out how to, work with the people who are willing to work with me, and then, you know, be able to influence their thoughts, feelings, and actions.
Well, you know, I think you're putting a cart before the horse, willing to work with you. It's really, what is it they want out of their lives? And can you tap that deeper yearning in them? My freshman year at college, I was in one of the more egghead fraternities, and I really wanted us to have good sports teams. And I was the pledge class president. And I spent an awful lot of time cajoling and harassing people to go out for the basketball team, intramural basketball and intramural baseball. And it was a matter of rounding people up and getting them out of their momentum. So I think part of leadership is really staying in touch with those people and not just saying, well, who's going to play nice with me? But am I willing to step out and risk rejection and disturb people for their own good? Because if it's working out, people want to work out, but they don't want to work out. And so you influencing their thoughts, feelings, and actions includes getting them to the gym. So I think the question isn't who's willing and worth your time. I think the question is, are you worth your time? And are you interested in learning and growing by really committing to them? And what's the contract you need to form with them? Have you talked to them? Have you said, look, you know, you're going to break down. People always break down. Do I have your permission to disturb you and to really get you going again? So you want to get a good contract with people. So, you know, so that's one of the things I'd go for. I'd say, look, you know, are you willing to make a commitment to do 10 sessions to make 10 out of the next 12 sessions? I'm going
well,
to
like, interrupt you for a second, Bob. The gym analogy was simply for the purposes of analogy. I think really the mission I'm trying to get folks to go with me on is a lot of the work that I'm doing at Wright and, you know, being on our own side as well as living a more engaged life, not being concerned with just drinking and chasing women every weekend, but rather doing something that's more productive and valuable for ourselves as well as society.
Well, it's the same thing. What's the contract? And what is their level of stated commitment? And then are they willing to be disturbed? It's the same thing as going to the basketball game, the baseball game, or the gym. You know, are they really engaged and are they committed to going for it? And you know, different people are going to be committed at different levels. I think we lost Travis.
No, I'm here.
Yeah. What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is that I am seeking a way to distinguish those that are worth my time versus those that I don't want to have to deal all that with, because I think that I've kind of tapped the well too many times with the people that I spend a lot of time with, and it's time to move on to some people who are worth investing in.
Well, that's different. That's different. That gets us to having valuable friendships and friendships of aligned nature, which is a sort. It's a numbers game. You've got to be willing to go through an awful lot of people to find out who has the commitment and who doesn't. And that's building your life team. And if you can add two or three great people to your life team every year, you're doing wonderfully. But in order to add two or three, you may have to audition 50 to 100.
So how do you become a leader of your own life team then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've got a form. When you come in next Tuesday night, remind me, and I'll actually give you a friendship spreadsheet that helps you articulate your values, your friend's values, and it helps you start really looking at who brings you the greatest return. You might be surprised, but it does let you strategize where you want to spend your time.
So identify who it is that I want to spend my time with, and then use the leadership skills we're learning to influence thoughts, feelings, and actions of them for our own benefit to further our mutual goals, I guess.
Yeah. And so we're talking about building your life team now, and we're talking about really how you choose to invest your life and with whom you choose to invest it, and what kinds of returns you expect.
Okay.
Good. Well, thank you very much. I'll look forward to seeing you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So this is, I'm glad we're hitting this level of leadership, because usually we end up talking about organizational leadership. But one of the most important leadership domains of your life will be your friendships. Do you take initiative? Do you consciously choose your friends? Do you define friendship by how long you've known each other? Or do you look for a return on your investment in your friendships? You don't have to get rid of people. If you think of your friendships as concentric circles, you want to keep bringing the best, strongest members to the central circle. Think of it like a baseball team. Baseball teams have the big leagues. They have, you know, we've got our White Sox, and the White Sox have AAA affiliates, AA affiliates, A affiliates. You don't have to get rid of them. Sometimes you bring a AAA affiliate up to the big leagues. Sometimes they go down. Sometimes you trade to another team. So you want to think about, how do I have the most uplifting, supportive team where I feel like my life is being well spent? I think it's a great question that Travis is asking. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright, Professor of Transformational Leadership at the Wright Graduate University for the Realization of Human Potential. And I am thrilled to have you here with us as we work on bringing out the best in every domain of life. Next week, we're going to be going into career. And join us for one of the most dynamic, productive weekends of your life. We have a Transform training coming up Friday through Sunday, March 21st to 23rd. Get here. Get inspired. Learn the core skills to tap your fullest potential and bring out the best the rest of your life. Today we're offering you our TT bundle, Transform Training Bundle. It includes online access. It's the powerful Transform Training. You'll get our audio MP3 that you can listen to in the car, wherever. The Transformed, The Science of Spectacular Living book, a LinkedIn training DVD so you can watch it at home, and a vision coaching session worth $160 and your own spot at the next live training, which is $297. You've got a workbook too, and you can do it at home, you can do it in Australia, you can do it in Pakistan. We've got somebody who is doing it in Australia. So we're thrilled to have you with us. Just go to www.ttbundle.com and enter the code VIPBlog, capital VIPBlog. Our third caller is Shafoe. She says, how do I establish relationship with my direct reports such that I maintain the line of them following my directive, even though at times I'm asking them to do something they don't agree with? Now, that's an interesting bind. Talk to us, Shafoe.
Hi, Bob. So I am really resonating with what you're saying about being in relationship and really caring about them and caring about the people that, even though they're my direct reports, I have to support them and get them to do more than they think themselves possible. And there's times when I follow the initiatives and the directives from corporate, and there's things that I want to do, and the people that work for me don't necessarily agree with doing those things. So then it's a fine line that I don't necessarily have their buy-in, but they work for me. So there are certain things they have to do because we all work for this corporation and we sometimes have to do things that we don't agree. I mean, I don't know. I just think that there is – when my boss asks me to do something that I don't necessarily agree with, I mean, that's the clear line of command that I have to do it for her because she's my boss. And that doesn't always seem to work with the people that work for me. So I'm wondering
hang on. I want to understand the disagreement. Is it an ethical disagreement?
It's not an ethical disagreement. It's more around, well, they don't believe that doing that task will necessarily contribute the type of impact to profitability that we need to happen.
Well, is there is an alternative being offered?
So the way that works is that there are some processes that everybody in the department has to do because we think that process will, management thinks that process will improve profitability. Sometimes it ends up not working, and a lot of the times it ends up working because everybody's energy is around it. So if there's one person who disagrees with that, they may have very valid reasons for disagreeing with that. They may think that it's not going to work for their particular territory or for what they believe in. But it's a directive. We just kind of got to do what everybody else is doing.
Okay. So this is part of being a good team member. Can you put your full effort into the success of something that you don't think is the right thing to do?
Exactly.
Yep. And that is a very real leadership challenge. And so one of the terrible things that happens is when people don't agree with a method, they engage in a self-fulfilling prophecy and they make sure it doesn't work.
Right.
We call that bad faith. So you're in bad faith doing it. You're not intending to have do your best and give it a chance. Good faith, you do your best and you give it every chance you can. So your bind is, how do I get people to put a good faith effort into a strategy they don't agree with?
Exactly.
Well, how have you tried?
Well, my approach that I tried before, I don't know if something has really worked historically, has been, hey, look, this is a directive from senior leaders. This is what we got to do, and we're going to do it because this is part of existing in our role. We kind of got to do what top management says we have to do. And that doesn't necessarily get like you said, that gap that I see is they may do the things that they absolutely have to do, but they're not intending for to get results, the positive results. And so for me, if I get something from my boss, they don't buy into the same level of it's coming from top, you got to do it and make it work. Like, that's not necessarily everybody's come from.
Well, telling people that they have to do something doesn't usually win their hearts and minds.
Yeah. Yes, I figured that one out.
Now, there are times that's just the reality.
Yeah.
But as a leader, you have other things to call people to. And it depends on the person and how you're going to do it. And I think you want to start out by acknowledging that this is a strategy that none of us agree with. We don't think it's the right strategy. And everybody will say, yeah, that's stupid. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that, da, 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 da. You say, okay, great. But it's what we're supposed to do. So what are we going to do? What do you mean, what are we going to do? Well, are we going to sit around and piss and moan? Or are we going to carry ourselves with self-respect and give this a fair, great shot? So you help them look at their choice and invite them to choose between spending their life beautifully on a strategy they don't believe about or spending their life as a bunch of pissing, moaning victims, drama queens. And you let them talk, and you let them say, well, but it doesn't have to be that way, da, 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 da. You're right. You're right. But the real challenge we have as a team is, are we going to be trustworthy to do our best with something we don't agree with? Or are we going to just do a half-ass and hurt our own self-esteem and our own self-respect? That's one of the things that Alfred Adler brought to this game of bringing out your best, is people have to be given choice. It's the way you deal with a 2-year-old, and it's the way you deal with a 20-year-old or a 40-year-old. People have to have a choice, and the truth of the matter is, that's the choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you tell them we've got to do it, we don't win hearts and minds. But when we call up choice and we make it black and white that way, well, then we're inviting people to be more self-respecting. And, by the way, are we as a team going to fully give ourselves to this? Or do we want to live our lives in limbo and not really go for it and go through the paces? So it's really you inviting them to full engagement. How does that sound?
I like that a lot. That sounds pretty exciting, actually.
Yeah, and so you get to develop yourself. You get to really look at your capacity to care about them and care about the job. Contact with them and be focused on doing something that you don't agree with for the profitability of the company. And then the other thing is for you to complain up and disagree up, not down. There was a wonderful movie, it's called Saving Private Ryan. And there was a Captain Miller who was sent on a patrol to find Private Ryan and bring him back because his brothers had been killed and he was the last surviving member of his family. And they don't want last surviving members of a family to be in a war zone where they can get killed. And one of the people on the patrol starts complaining to the captain. And the captain said, and asks the captain if he agrees. And captain says, "Son, I complain up. I do not complain down." And then later on, their sniper says, "I don't know why they've got us on this damn patrol to save this guy. They should just ship me to Berlin and let me get up in a tower and knock that Hitler off." And then Captain Ryan, Captain Miller turns around and he says, "That's how you complain. You complain with a better solution than the one you're in." And so you also want to bring some fun into it and let them complain and say, "Now, can we complain and do our best?" So that was your
complain goal. And do our best. So basically.
Yep. Yeah, you want people to have room to have fun, to talk, and get them to also spend their life beautifully. Okay. Go get them, Shafoe. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
So you're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio, and we're talking about leadership from the inside out. We're talking about leadership with friends. We're talking about leadership with employees. We're talking about leadership in different cultures. And now we're going to talk about leadership and our personal growth and development. This is the month of play. Every month we pick a different principle or a different abstraction to invite the entire Extended Right community to work on. We're working on play, which is the full engagement in here and now, so that I'm learning, growing, and becoming the person I could become, bringing out our best. And Yasmin wants to bring out the best in her personal growth group. She says, "How do I motivate my group to move from the bottom rankings to the top?" Talk to us, Yasmin.
Afternoon, Bob. This is Yasmin. Thank you for taking my call. I became tasked in our group, the Roaring Tigers, in the Year of Transformation. And we're doing, as you know, the personal power quarter. And unfortunately, halfway into the quarter, our group was ranked at the bottom of all the groups in terms of our performance. And since I'm tasked, which is a leadership role, I want to bring the group into integrity in a cohesive and fun manner to move from the bottom to the top of the list, and we finish this changing our placement in the overall structure and really put our best effort forward, bringing out the best in all of us. And I would like some help in terms of how to accomplish that.
Yes, I mean, do your people want to move? How do they like being last?
On an individual basis, everyone is, when you talk to one-to-one, they seem to be eager to improve. I'm hearing group members voicing, "Yeah, we should get this. We should, win this," and so forth. And then when it comes to, overall how we are doing things, we're not quite up there.
Well, you know, what stands out for me as I listen to you is you're saying we should. And
yes.
When people operate from shoulds, you know, what they should do doesn't usually work because it means
okay.
they don't want.
Okay.
So not much we can do if they just think they should. Question is, what do they want to do?
Okay, okay.
What's their deeper yearning? That's your job as a leader, is to tap the hearts and minds. And when you're tapping people's hearts, you're tapping their deeper yearning.
Okay.
To see and be seen, to touch and be touched, and to matter. It sounds like your group is having trouble mattering as individuals, and it sounds like they're definitely having trouble mattering and actually feeling cohesive as a group. Cohesive, you know, sticking together.
Yes.
Doesn't sound like you've got that cohesiveness.
Personal observation, I agree with that statement. The cohesiveness is not quite there. And I was wondering, how can I do a good job, get us there? And I'm hearing, you know, find out the deeper yearnings of individuals. And then there are other leadership roles. I am task, and another group member is motivation, and another group member is integrity. So one thought I had with my coach's advice is to have weekly sessions with the three leadership roles within the group, assess where we are with all truths put on the table, and then take action to go to the next step and bring out their wanting to do this rather than we should. I fully agree with that comment.
Well, you know, it's the same challenge you would have whether you had a work team or whether you a growth group. It's not about structure. It's about relationship. Do they feel cared about by you and the other leaders? Do they feel seen? What are they afraid of? When people aren't performing, it's usually because they're afraid. Might be because they're hurt and angry, but usually there's some level of fear, some level of risk. And they don't feel secure. So I think your first job is to create a sense of security and safety for everybody. My sense is that you're trying to do cheerleading before you have a team to cheerlead.
This is as of last night, so this is brand new. Until now, I was in the role of integrity, and I tried to motivate them in terms of cheering them up as well as setting the, like, this needs to be done type positive rules aspect. But I'm open to all suggestions in the new
what
level
is,
of
what
being
is cheering
tasked.
Them up mean? What does cheering them up mean?
Like having fun in the process of doing the work.
You're trying to cheerlead a group that's not a group.
Okay.
I don't hear they need cheering up. I hear they need to be seen. They need to feel known.
Okay.
They need to feel like they're tapping their potential, like there's something in this for them.
Okay. I'm taking notes.
So
yeah.
I think you should get together with your other two leaders and you guys talk and you see what
okay.
you're going to do. See what you're going to do with that group, and you let me know. And
okay.
I'll look forward to hearing about it.
Okay, I sure will. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
yes,
it. Thank you.
Thank you. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I mean, it is so tough when you're with a group of people that are not fully engaging. And I'm taken back to the Beaver Patrol, the Boy Scout Patrol that they gave me. I was on a patrol that was just magic. We won everything we did, and then they broke us up and they put us in charge of other patrols. And boy, was I terrible. I had the most down and out patrol. I couldn't get them to do anything. I'd been a key member of a magical patrol, and you know, we could go to a big jamboree and camp around, you know, with 20 different troops, and our patrol could win. We won 3 out of 4 contests at one. We went to a Klondike Derby, and we won the Klondike Derby. It was all Boy Scout competitions. Then I had just a loser patrol, and I wanted to kill myself. Just sitting in those patrol meetings was hell. And so I really feel for Yasemin. When a group is not wanting to go for it and you don't have a few other spark plugs, it is really, really tough. And we've got a leader of one of those groups who's going to talk to us. By the way, I am Dr. Bob Wright, Professor of Transformational Leadership and Coaching at the Wright Graduate University for the Realization of Human Potential. Check out my blog for more on play at rightliving.com/blog. We've got Mike now. How do I use being competitive to make a positive impact on the group rather than using it to attempt to bring the leader down? Oh, so we got a guy who's been a rebel and put some leaders down and taken the wind out of their sails. So talk to us, Mike.
Yeah, I just started in this group, and I noticed, like, right when the established leader, the designated leader in the group, the original leader in the group, giving me some criticism, that I felt competitive and wanted to defend myself, and I was defending myself, and I kind of caught it, I don't think that's a good strategy to just not compete with him. So I'm one of the things I've been doing is asking better questions about how can I align with him and how do I stay on align with the higher purpose of the group and stuff like that. But I think I've been kind of frozen when I catch myself feeling competitive with him, and all I've been doing is my reaction is just to not compete with him. And it doesn't help me move forward. So I think I feel kind of stuck in that sometimes.
Well, yeah, the real challenge is how do you make him better? And so first of all, I suggest you take a look at where your competition is coming from, because it's not coming from your concern about the group. It's coming from some kind of concern about you. And so I suggest you find out where that's coming from. Identify the deeper yearning and learn to meet that need for yearning, that yearning need to be important, to be seen, to be known, and see if you can't get it met in another way.
Oh, yeah. I see that now.
You know, I heard about this guy that was supposed to be this fantastic leader from Michigan. And I had a friend, he was a PhD in business out of Northwestern, and he was a professor at DePaul at the time. And we planned a seminar with a guy I'd never met before. And it was mostly people I enrolled from our business in the seminar. And so this guy comes down and... For starters, he's one of these know-it-all guys. He must have weighed about 350-plus pounds, and he knew everything. And he, no matter what my friend or I said, he was going to one-up us. So I was in a bind, and I had my competition dander up pretty heavily. But that wasn't going to serve the room. And so I decided to put as much wind in my friend's sails as I could. And I just kept backing every everything he said. I addressed questions to him. And next thing you know, I had my friend basically leading the whole room and having a wonderful time. And the other guy just disappeared and occasionally tried to get into it again. And I just kept putting attention and energy on my friend. And my friend had a wonderful time, and he did a great seminar, and it was the seminar we planned on doing. And the other guy was barely a value add, and occasionally he said something useful, and I supported it. And when he was just blowing hot air, I put it right back on my friend. And people were thrilled with the day. It was a one-day seminar. So this is really a challenge when, you know, when somebody like you is in the group trying to undermine the leaders, is how do you support the leader? So now I think your challenge is going to be, how do you support the leader and make that leader good, and how do you disappear? What do you think about that?
Well, I had done that before, and I forgot how well that worked, so I'm going to go back to that strategy and work on just looking for ways to make him better.
Yeah. Isn't that really the challenge? What are we about?
Yeah.
Group success or ego strokes?
Yeah.
And I know you know how to do that, so I wish you all the best in doing that work with your group, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for that vulnerable share. I tell you, people like Mike are fantastic. If a leader is willing to acknowledge his competition, then he can identify the deeper yearning. Then he can meet that yearning in different ways. And then he can really become an agent of empowerment in a group. And that's a big, big challenge that we all face. And every one of us faces it, and it helps us bring out the best, because you're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright, and I'd love to have you join us for the Transform Training 2 Fridays from now. And it's going to be March 21st to 23rd. And you can also, if you can't make that training, we have other trainings. You can also get the Transform Training Bundle. And it's fantastic, only $297. And it includes a DVD of the training. Online, you can watch the DVD. You can get a CD, MP3. You can get the book. You get a free coaching session. You get a workbook. And you can get a weekend's worth of training for very little. Come to the training, and it'll only cost you $97. And the reason we charge you so little for a training that we used to charge almost $800 for is because we want to introduce you to our year of transformation. It will blow your mind week in and week out. You will do new assignments. You will learn how to engage in life in a whole new way. You'll learn how to bring out your best. And that's what we're looking at, is bringing out your best. And this is Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. And our next caller is Brenda. She feels like she's micromanaging her employees, and it's wasting a lot of time. How do I not micromanage? Brenda, talk to me.
Hi, Bob.
Hiya.
Well, first of all, one of the issues is that I don't have employees. I have subcontractors. So they're always free to leave anytime they want. And it's a challenge for me. I have a writing and editing company, just so that's understood. And then I have writers who do some of the initial drafting for me of documents, and they interact with clients, and I review their material, and I often see the communications that they're sending to clients. So I have processes that I like to use. And one of the things that happens is that I think my processes are clear, and I've had maybe 10 different subcontractors, and they've always done it that way, and it's never been an issue. And then one comes in and does it a different way, and I'm saying, okay, well, could you please use this form to send this document? And then she does that, but she does something else that is not the way that we, you know, that we've done it, and that doesn't really work very well. Like, she just sends the form and doesn't send it a communication, an email communication along with it. And then I'm like, why didn't you send an email communication? And it's just this one thing after another until finally we get it right. But then I feel like she's going to be so frustrated by the whole interaction that she's not going to want to work with me anymore because this is such a pain in the ass.
Okay, so you don't have an onboarding process that saves you this agony and saves her this agony, and you don't have a policy and procedure manual, or you do and she doesn't follow it?
Well, I do, and obviously it hasn't covered every single thing that it could cover, because I didn't think this, you know, this is something that has never come up before, that everyone has just done before, so I thought that it was explained well enough, but clearly it wasn't.
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges of leadership. My partner, Bob Kaufman, and I, back in the early 80s, started discovering that when we were unhappy, one of three things had happened. We had not told somebody what needed to be done, hadn't trained them. We hadn't reinforced them in it. And or they were not interested in pleasing us. So we developed a process whereby we were always adjusting our job descriptions and our feedback forms so people knew what we wanted to do. Because at the front end, we were constantly learning things we thought were obvious that we hadn't communicated. So it sounds to me like giving you feedback about how to add to and change your policy and procedures. The other piece I thought I heard in you is you're afraid that this micromanaging is going to push people away.
Yes.
I don't hear you micromanaging. I hear you having a process that you want followed that you don't know how to do efficiently, so you end up, you know, kind of with death by a thousand cuts of paper. But it didn't sound like micromanagement to me. It sounded
I'm afraid that they're going to leave when any kind of issue or problem comes up, and that's maybe the bigger issue. And micromanaging, you know, I run a writing and editing company, so I'm the final editor. So I got to make sure that there are no errors in the documents and all of that. So that's, you know, that's managing in a way on a very micro level, but it has to be like that because I don't want mistakes going out in the documents that go to my clients. You know, so it's important that stuff gets done right. But I think there is this issue that, I mean, another issue that came up with this person was, I told her that she had an hourly client. She said, yes, I'll do this in 1 hour, and then she went and spent 2 hours on it. So I could only pay her for 1 hour. The client only paid for 1 hour. And so there's another issue. They came up with the same contractor. And so we worked through that and how we're going to handle it next time. But I'm always in this fear, like, they're going to leave because there's, like, maybe something that they're not getting. I don't know. It's like, how do I make them feel like I really care about them when they get one project per week, and this person lives in England, and as I've been listening to these other calls, that's sort of what's been coming up for me.
No, you're putting too much pressure on caring about them. Let's go back. Let me just handle this one, and then I want to go back. For starters, I assume your agreements say very clearly that they bid a job and that bid is fixed unless you can somehow get the client to pay more.
I don't have an agreement that says that explicitly.
I think you need to be refining your agreements all the time.
Yes.
And then to your network, you send out adjustments to the agreements so everybody gets it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're putting a lot on you caring about her. I think more important is you look at the opportunity that you're offering people. You're offering them an opportunity to make some money. You're offering them an opportunity to work with diverse populations. And you're offering them an opportunity to learn from you and to grow.
Yeah, and it's that last one that's the biggest one, I think.
Right. So instead of thinking it's all about you caring, it's nice to care about people, but there's no more to your mission and your value proposition. So it doesn't sound like you've put your mission together in a compelling fashion that basically says that what you do is you, like us, you help bring out the best in your clients and your contractors, that we're all engaged in a project of learning how to do whatever we do more effectively, to write more effectively, to communicate more effectively, and to more brilliantly bring out the best in everybody around us. So that it sounds like part of your leadership challenge is to have a more radiant mission.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I work on your own materials and how you communicate to your contractors and getting everybody burning with that sense of mission.
Mm-hmm.
Because people want to feel that they're spending their life beautifully learning and growing.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's true. That's the contractors and the clients who fall under that.
Right.
That's great, yeah. And I'm, like, checking in with what my mission is now, and it's really all about the clients. I have a vision, and it's to empower people and companies to be confident and unstoppable in reaching their goals.
That's great. But so the same has to be true for your contractors.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. I see a lot of room. That's really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice job, Brenda. Okay,
yeah,
so you're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright, Professor of Transformational Leadership at the Wright Graduate University for the Realization of Human Potential. And we're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. Our topic has been leadership, making bold moves. And that's what Brenda's going to be looking at, is bold moves around mission and around accountability and not worrying about people quitting because the mission's so hot and so cool that everybody would want to be part of it. And Mike is going to make bold moves to empower the people around him. That was a really big share for somebody to admit they have competitive feelings towards others. And Yesemin is going to tap the hearts and minds of her group, while Shafoe is going to help people look at spending their lives beautifully, even if it's on something that they don't agree with. And Travis is going to be building the strongest friendship network he can of mission-based people going for it in life, while Fessel is going to touch the hearts and minds of people in different cultures. That's what Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio is all about. Thank you very much for joining us today in Leadership Bold Moves. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. Goodbye.